नमो तस्स भगवतो अरहतो सम्मा सम्बुद्धस्स अपारुता दे संगम तस्स थवरा ये सुरवन्था बमुञ्चन्तु सदं
I made a vow years ago not to laugh about new monks keeping their robes on, because it's very embarrassing when you're getting used to wearing these things. And it takes a while to get used to wearing robes. I remember, years ago I was at a Hindu ashram in India, and they had all these Western women, who were trying to wear saris. And they looked terrible in saris, you know, where Indian women looked really good, and then they got these perfect, they wear these saris, and they're perfectly even with the ground, and everything's just perfectly folded, and this cloth wound around, and look very elegant, and they move in this very elegant way. But Western women don't move very elegantly, so they kind of go all over the place, and the sari falls off all the time. So they had all these uneven hems, you know, hiked up here and pinned together, and that. So they didn't look very good. Because the same with robes, it's learning how to, you know, it kind of holds you in, and you have to learn how to live in a robe, in different situations than wearing shirts and trousers. Just like when you're taking on the precepts and that you're learning to live within restraints, that, you know, kind of action around physical action and speech. So that also, you know, it's a way of training oneself to be mindful, to put use something that you're not used to in order to learn how it reflects the way that we generally act when we don't have restraints on behavior or on what we're wearing, where we can just wear what's most convenient and functional and utilitarian or whatever. Then do you think these robes aren't very utilitarian? You know, they're quite waste of a lot of cloth. And you can look at it like that, you know. And you have, wear this big kind of bed sheet and wrap it around you. It's always falling off, and you know, you get uneven shoulders over the years as you're holding it in on this side. So you think, you know, we should wear and design a better, you know, the mind wants to, you know, utilitarian mind things make a more practical design and all that. But, you know, I wouldn't mind really, but then, but then another way, you can also learn from the way it is, you know, with what we do have. So when you're putting yourself into a tradition, such as this one, you know, it may not be, you know, that streamlined and practical and modern and politically correct and with the modern times and all that, but also we learn a lot from it if we're willing to use it for reflection. For contemplation rather than, you know, always, you know, think there's something wrong because we're always trying to improve it or change it. So in any tradition is not saying that, you know, not trying to justify it or say that it doesn't need any change or that it, because the Buddha established that it's perfect and you should never question its perfection. These are the kind of attitudes I don't like at all. You know, these are to be questioned, but also the main thing is to awaken to what you're feeling, what you're thinking. The way we can just obsess our minds with the things we don't like about something or about ourselves or about somebody else. And that takes over, you know, where we lose perspective on what we're really here for. Where things get cultish and corrupt is when everybody has to, you know, when we force everybody to agree and then excommunicate or send away or condemn all those who question or don't agree. Where if you know the Buddha's teaching, it's not, you know, he made it very clear the limitation of convention. Of course, they have this incredible Kalama Sutra, amazing kind of sutta from the Tripitaka, which encourages not to believe just because it's in the scripture or because the teacher says so, or because it's tradition, or everybody says it's true, or whatever. But to know for yourself. So this is the kind of encouragement, the kind of offering of, you know, to awaken, to trust in our own ability to be awake, rather than to never trust ourselves enough because we have so much, we hold so much to the conventions that we're using. The teaching itself is if you really use the Dhamma teachings, then they actually take you always to the same place. You know, if you explore conditions, sankharas, and you really stay with them, and you really investigate sankhara, then it always takes you to the unborn, to the Nibbana, to the deathless. So you might believe that or not believe it as a teaching, But then this isn't a teaching that you grasp, but it's teaching I hope you'll reflect on and use if this is something you can prove for yourself. That as you develop or cultivate this sense of awareness, intuitive awareness, then you begin to trust it, cultivate it. First we forget it because we're not used to, we're so used to our delusions and ignorance and habits and ways that we do things and assumptions that we make and conventions that we use. And we we're bound to them very much, and when they're threatened, then we get very reactive, very upset. You can see the world in a very state of being very upset now because of the threats to the security and the safety that we hold to through when we're living in a way that we are used to and that has not been threatened in such a way. So the whole, one feels that the Americans and so forth, their whole way of life, the assumptions and sense of security and safety and all that has been disrupted. And of course, the reaction is wanting to destroy the enemy. So that's the way, if that's not the way of reflection, the way of wisdom, but that's what we do, trying to, if we don't open and use awareness and wisdom to understand, then we do the very same thing. We were always trying to suppress or deny or resist so much of what we experience. We have all kinds of defense mechanisms or ways we get out of things or resist any kind of thing that feels threatening or makes me uncomfortable. So that's the pattern that comes out of ignorance, avidya, pandeya sankhara. So then if there's ignorance of the Dhamma, then that's going to affect everything. All a relationship to sankhara is through ignorance. So the body is sankhara, the world is sankhara, America is sankhara, terrorism is sankhara, the enemy is sankhara, the conventions are sankhara, everything, all conditioned phenomena, sabbe sankharani cha, all sankhara, all conditions are impermanent. So as long as that illusion remains, then naturally that's the way we're going to deal with it. You can just see the resistance or as the terrorists attack us from within. What do you do with them when you feel frightened or threatened or abused or misunderstood or exploited or whatever? What do you do? What's your reaction? And I can see, my own reactions are, violent usually, wanting to, if it's, depending on the, what's particularly the condition threatening me, but it can, I very want to just destroy it. A lot of suppression or what they call denial or resistance. Anger, I feel that you are the cause, and I even want to get rid of you. So it's get rid of the conditions that I feel are making me suffer. or that which destroys my security or threatens my safety as a person. So this is just the kind of normal reaction out of avijja as it affects sankhara and manifests in vijnana. In the paticca samuppada of avijja bhajya sankhara, sankhara bhajya vijnanam. And so the consciousness then is where the manifestation takes place. And then from there on it always leads to dukkha. Soka pariteva dukkha tomana supayasa. Grief, sorrow, despair, and anguish. So you can see just the grief, sorrow, despair, and anguish that comes from, let's just say, the catastrophe in New York City and Washington, D.C. Somebody gave me a lot of newspapers today, and this is all these photographs of just grief, sorrow, despair, and anguish, lamentation, anger, and this is the result of ignorance. So if you take avijja as, if you start from avijja, you're going to end up with dukkha. But this is not to be grasped, this is not, this is for investigation, to see if I'm suffering, if I feel I'm suffering, or I feel soka paritewa, whatever, then what is it I'm grasping? So then this is a way of looking and, self-inquire. What is it? What is grasping anyway? Most people don't even know what grasping is. This is what clinging or upadana is. We're not trained or encouraged or educated to look at things in this way. And so this is the advantage we have in this particular situation, like Francesco and Mark asking to take the Anagarika precepts for 1 year. This is the reason to have a community, a situation that encourages this kind of investigation. So you can see for yourself, know this, and prove it to yourself. And today I received a book from Thailand. It's called Email Dhamma. And it's in English, and it's about all the kind of modern circuits that are working now to discuss Dharma problems and Dharma discussions through email. This is quite interesting. A lot of it I'll never do this. It sounds just like what I don't want to do is have Dharma discussions through email. But around the way people discuss about teachers and their misconduct and things like this. People put a lot of faith in teachers or gurus, and then the gurus or teachers do something. Some usually sexual misconduct of some sort, and then some people feel very angry about it, and other people just don't want to know about it. And other people, various opinions and views that they circulate through the email about this particular subject. So in the taking of the sila, sila is, always look at the sila as as you know, something that nobody has the right to ask you to break. You know, this is your right. Your right to live within this sila. So no matter how, you know, much you respect the teacher or a great guru or a sage or enlightened master, you know, stick up for your rights. Don't get intimidated by the power, prestige, reputation, or charisma of anybody. So this is seeing sila as rights rather than as some kind of onerous restriction on behavior. Because this as a right, of course, I mean, this is one way of looking at it. I'm not saying this is the only way to see it, but I found this quite beneficial to me, to see that this is a, you know, I chose, asked for this, and then the right to live within this restraint, then to have that sense that this is my right, and therefore, if this is not affirmed, then of course the other things can come in to where, you know, the power of the teacher or you know, you're thinking that the teacher knows what's good for you, or you know, how we project onto teachers all kinds of, they know what I need, and so people are quite willing to follow even into very unskillful actions if they make and believe in that kind of projection. So this is where the right is. This is a protection also, you know, in a sense of restraint that gives us space and time to look at all our own, you know, the way we think and feel and react and to life and the life in the community. This whole, you know, that we can see, you can see yourself as anagarikas, anagarikas, and see yourself as kind of, in a power structure, hierarchical structure. So then, this can also be kind of threatening. You know, you're at the, you know, in terms of the committed community, formal community, you're at the, you're now at the kind of the last one, and then you can look at me as the top dog, and then you're the underdog maybe. I know one English woman years ago used to always, you know, she obviously had a great fear of hierarchy, because this was when we first came to England. She was always trying to support the noble order of the anagarikas. very English, isn't it, to have incredible compassion, feeling for the underdog rather than that old guy that sits on, you know, people bow to him, and the top dog, you can develop strong aversion for him. It's because he is in that position. But this is, these are emotional reactions we have to what we're experiencing. So it's important to notice and to be aware, you know, to recognize these patterns that we create, you know. So if we're identified with being, you know, somehow in a hierarchy, and then the word hierarchy can also bring up feelings, you know, to an American hierarchy. I remember feeling that it wasn't right. Hierarchical structures were basically wrong, because the American idealism is egalitarian. So I remember just living in the Peace Corps in Borneo, where I had servants for the first time. I had there was a boy that came and cooked, and there was a woman that came and cleaned the house and did the laundry. And it was really difficult for me to have servants, because if you got egalitarian views, then it just felt to go around and say, tell them what to do, like the way the British would do. or the Asians, it was just felt so rude and insulting and patronizing. So, but I totally confused my two servants, because they would rather I just say, do this, do that, and scold them when they don't do it, and then that's what they're used to, and that's what they expected, and they're totally confused by my behavior because of my American idealism. And the way I felt, I was very critical of the way, say, the English. I came to Sabah at the time when most of the, when the British had just relinquished Sabah and Sarawak into the Malaysian Federation. So almost, I arrived after a couple of days, almost 2 days after that event. So all the British civil servants were still in situ. They were the district officers and all that, the school superintendents, everything were still British. So during the 2 years that I was there, that was mostly the way it is. Then they were phasing them out to replace them with local or the native people. But then when going to Thailand and becoming a monk, then I began to value the hierarchical structure in the Sangha, because the way I began to look at it in a different way, rather than as putting me in a demeaning position, putting me as somehow inferior, and this is how one would take it, otherwise, that being a servant, being at the lower levels is somehow demeaning me, making me inferior to those that are on the higher levels. Well, that's the way of taking it all very personally. We create that. We create ourselves as somehow lesser if we're in a service position rather than in an administrative one. So we can see being abbot like being a king, And then being the Lasthanagarika or Lasthanagarika is somehow, you're just this, you're kind of a servant, someone who's somehow inferior to the one on the throne. And so these are, seen in terms of worldly values and ideals, that's how it may seem, or that's the attitude you may assume from it. So be aware of this, of how we, the problems we can create around this, in order to see that this is merely a functional convention. It's not meant to be, to identify, to seek a personal identity with it, based on seniority and so forth. So it's nothing personal. It doesn't because I'm the senior monk, doesn't make me somehow better or superior to any of you. You know, that it's no statement about any, on a personal level, that I'm in any way superior to anyone else. So it's functional, it's utilitarian convention, basically. Gives us a form to use to reflect in. Where it goes off is where you identify with, you know, I'm a senior monk, and I'm an Ajahn, and you're only an Anagarika. then of course, it's we're creating an ego around the position. You know, this is what we're trying not to do. You know, to be able to free ourselves from doing that. At least that's my. I don't want to be, create any more ego. Got enough ego. You don't need any more of it. So ego comes out of ignorance. It's not anything, you know, that to, and I mean, if you create a better ego, it's still out of ignorance. So the purpose, the whole aim and thrust and benefit of this life is for this intuitive awareness, which we all use, which isn't the prerogative or the you know, that I can somehow do this better than you can. Somehow, I was quite happy when I was a junior monk. The years I was with Lungpa Cha, it was really nice being with such a good person, you know. And so, you know, and he had to do all the work. I just kind of rode along behind, you know, and. And I quite liked that, you know, and he'd take all the responsibility and I just could kind of benefit from it, you know. I'd get, you know, he's a very generous man, so I, you know, he'd share everything. So I, you know, it was nice to be around him, and then I'd benefit, and I didn't have to be responsible for anything. And so... Riding in the wake of Lungpa Cha, I didn't feel demeaned or inferior. I really liked that. You know, it was really, those were happy years, in memory anyway. But then when I became the abbot of Wat Nanai Chat, that was, you know, that was a bit putting me out on the line, you know, pushing me out of this comfortable scene. And then I had to rise up to that, you know, to be able to learn from what was happening, what, you know, the way things move and change. I always thought I wouldn't mind being a servant. And I quite like serving others. It's not, you know, it's not I don't have a strong feeling that it's demeaning or that it makes me lesser by serving. And sometimes I find it quite difficult to be always, you know, on the receiving end, and where people are always paying respect and bowing and giving me everything. It takes, also, one has to let go of a lot to receive. Because the ego can really, you know, the ego isn't always arrogant. It can be, a lot of my ego doesn't feel worthy of such respect. You know, the ego, the Ajahn Sumedho ego, it tends to, I never felt I don't think my ego's ever said, you lucky people, you can bow to me. I don't think I've ever had that feeling in my, at all. It was either I just put up with it or I don't feel worthy of it. And this is on the ego level of my personality that tends to feel unworthy of such respect. So that but I can reflect on that. I can see that. And then within the traditional forms that we use, then this is the way we do it. So then that is fine. You know, that is, you know, it's not that, you know, I want to change that, because basically, it doesn't inflate me. But say my reaction to it would be tendency to feel the opposite of not being worthy enough for such kind of devotional respect from people. So in the way of practice, you know, this is why the emptiness, beginning to recognize just this awareness, intuitive awareness, that I'm over the years have developed, cultivated this way, so that I'm not dwelling in my ego or giving my ego that which I follow and believe in. So I began to have perspective on what ego is, you know. And by this, that's the Sakkaya Ditti, or in Pali, Sakkaya Ditti, personality view. What we call in English, generally referred to as the ego, the sense of yourself as a person, personal worth, identity with the body, the emotions and thoughts and memories. So this is known through awareness. You know, the feeling not worthy of respect is ego. It might look like humility. That might even be humility, but it can also be, an ego. And the ego doesn't always mean that we feel, that we are arrogant. It means even our feelings of unworthiness are still ego, or Sakkaya Ditti. So the way to see that is to cultivate this emptiness, this stillness, this awareness, this attention in the moment. And of course, I've given many, many reflections on this already, how to do this. This is where the encouragement is to really do it, go for it and practice it, learn to, and you have to trust your own awareness, because it's like, nobody can tell you where it's at. You have to know. So as long as you, and this is where the getting beyond in your own thoughts and views, because pointing to this stillness, this silence, the sound of silence, this way of just kind of awakening and being fully present and sustaining it, learning to relax and trust and let go into this awareness, this stillness that's always here and now. And it takes, you have to have a determination to do it, because even though it's a very simple thing to do, we tend to easily get intimidated, and our egos can easily take us over. The world can easily take us over, just like the shouts for war, you know. We're not going to let those terrorists get away with what they've done. We're going to smoke them out of their holes, pursue them, chase them. No, the last one we've brought to justice. We easily get, you know, yeah, we can't let them get away with that. You know, they've attacked my country in New York City, Washington, D.C. They've attacked the Pentagon, and they've insulted, they've humiliated the Americans. And we're not going to stand for that. And so it's all powerful stuff, isn't it? And so the Americans, they say 70% of the American population wants to go to war now. And, you know, for a country that usually tries to back out of war, it's now, you know, that was exactly the thing to do to make them all want to go to war. Because, you know, as a mass of masses of people don't reflect, you know, you can't trust it, you know, masses of people, you know, demagogues and that easily can take over and manipulate masses of people to make them do all kinds of stupid and foolish and criminal and atrocious acts. So this is where, in terms of awareness, you know, this is coming from in here, you know, to really trust in this awakeness that only you are capable of realizing. You know, no one can, you aren't going to awaken as a group, but as this entity here, whoever you are. So if you're looking for an enlightened group of people that you can ride in, and because they're all enlightened, no matter how, even if all of us are enlightened, we're all the Sangha of Arahants, and you think you're going to get enlightened by being in our company, you've missed the point. And it's through that step of yours, you know, that awakeness that only you can do for yourself. Bhajjatang practice. But the terrorists that go on inside us, you know, they've got the terrorists outside, and then you know how they seem like now the world is ready to commit, you know, acts of terror against terrorists. You know, so you see, it's just hopeless, absolutely hopeless the way it is. That somehow terrorizing terrorists is somehow solving the problem. You know, the idea we could just kill all the terrorists, but we've become terrorists in the process. So we've got that karma on our back also. So that's obviously not the way, you know, evil is never, you know, it's disempowered through love, not through hatred. Of course, if I said, you know, we should welcome the terrorists, they invite me to Washington, D.C., advise President Bush, and say, he said, what would you advise, Sumedho? And I'd say, we must love the terrorists. I don't think I'd be appreciated. But in terms of, you know, who knows, you know, if we were capable of that. But first we have to be able to do it to ourselves, you know. We can't ask President Bush to do that if you can't do it yourself. You know, this is where it has to come from in here rather than endlessly, you know, blaming and hating others because they're caught in that delusion of annihilation and wanting to seek revenge and destroy the enemy. Because we do that in ourselves. So this is where, you know, what can we do now that can be a benefit to everybody in this very moment? I've asked myself this many times, what is the single thing I can do at this moment that will be a benefit to all sentient beings? And then it's mindfulness, intuitive awareness, awakeness. Even if it's for just one moment, you know. And it doesn't seem like much, not like I'm, you know, doing anything that anyone would even know the difference. But it increasingly allows the difference, you know, for me to realize, to trust, to cultivate, to really, really know the reality of this, know this reality that transcends just the limitations of the ego and the delusions that I have as a personality, as a nationality, as a convention, you know, whatever. So this week we have the community retreat. Tomorrow we can keep our vigil till midnight, and then we thought we haven't really had time to discuss this with the nuns, but this is still up for discussion. But we generally thought maybe the first few days very kind of the community practice. Of like our walk, our sitting, our walking, and after that to maybe do it in the mornings and then leave the afternoons to encourage practicing in the temple but to not have it so structured. Is that all right, do you think? You've got a better idea. We're quite open to it. And, but the main thing of it is that it's, this is the whole point, really, whether you're sitting, standing, walking, or lying down. Go to this still point, you know, really. Stay with it, listen to it, open and really, you know, so that you're getting used to it. It's natural. You've been learning to be at ease in the in the natural state of awareness, rather than always trying to find it or achieve, you know, the personal level. And where we get into our achieving, our views and opinions about practice and trying to attain or even letting go can be another, you know, thing we've got to do. I've got to let go. got to, I shouldn't be attached to anything. I've got to let go of everything. This could be another form of tyranny that we impose on ourselves. All good stuff, you know, letting go, but this avita, bhajya sankhara, bhajya vinyanang, and all that, then you're grasping even the most beautiful things, the truest statements, the wisest sayings. And what happens? It always ends up as dukkha. Not to mention if you're grasping the bad ones. So recognize the grasping, and to really know what grasping and non-grasping is. To contemplate this. And you can actually know the difference through this awareness, as you trust it more and more. When there's grasping and when there's not. So, I mean, don't even be against grasping. Really, really grasp things, you know. If you want to really hold on, you know, tight. Hold on to your views and opinions and all that, just as tight as you can, and then, but contemplate it. So you really, really can. You really know what you're doing. Grasping is like this, and you know, really investigate. You know, what does it feel like? Is it, do you feel happy? Does it make you feel liberated and free? And what is it really like when you grasp everything? And so then you through that grasping, then you. What is non-grasping like? So then this is for you to realize, to recognize. So that's enough for this evening, and you're all invited to participate to the midnight vigil.